Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Oh, here we are in the kitchen. This is the Donalana Kitchen on KHOI Community Radio. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We are here in this studio around this kitchen table. So glad you can join us. We're going to talk about some summer things today because it is, and there's lots of good things to eat. This radio station is put together by people who really care about radio, and we're mostly all volunteers. This is community radio. We volunteer our time. Other nice people do, too, and we get by with a little help from our friends.
Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural food grocery names. Community-owned, community-focused since 1974. Open daily, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
And we do. It's been a dandy summer so far. We've had drought. We've had rains. We've had all kinds of things. One thing we haven't had too much of is mosquitoes. I don't know where have they gone?
I don't know. I was puzzling that myself as I was. It was actually cool enough to sit on the front porch last night, and I kind of was on edge waiting for the mosquitoes to like start buzzing and going around, and nothing happened. I went, this is odd.
Yeah, and like everything else, there's good things and bad things. It's good that there's no mosquitoes for us, but what are the bats eating this time of year? I have no idea.
I don't know.
Well, so
there must be some science behind this.
I hope so. I hope they can find something. There's kind of a bat colony or bat family that kind of comes out around our farm, and we've been noticing it every night, except they're really thinning out. There's fewer and fewer. Either they're moving on or they just are little hungry things, I think. Oh, lots of things going on for the summer. There are midsummer tastes going on that we look forward to all year.
Oh, yeah, we're going into the major wind-up of the best food of the year.
Oh, now that is a good opinion, I think.
Oh,
I agree with you. The best food of the year.
It's coming, it's coming, it's coming.
We'll be talking about midsummer fruit today and also other things. Tomatoes and corn are coming.
Well, I have to ask you, Lana, for your tomato report. You know, Lana's growing 30 varieties of tomatoes. Let me reiterate that. 30 varieties. Somebody said to me, why would she want to grow 30 varieties? I said, for fun.
For fun. For fun. And they're all different and they're all great. And yes, they're looking great. This is a great tomato year. I have been picking small amounts for the past 2 weeks, and now it's kind of, you can tell, after the rain that we got, the tomatoes are kind of hunkered down, and they're coming.
Are we well into the cherry tomatoes now?
Oh, yes, yes. Cherry tomatoes are coming on great guns. And I've got, you know, little teeny tiny cherries, but then there's the ones that are a little bit bigger. They're kind of...
Didn't you mention some variety that you had tried for the first time this year that was just knocking your socks off?
Oh, there's one, yes. I've been looking at, people always like the Sun Gold cherry tomato.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was flipping through the Seed Savers Exchange
way book. Last February or
wait,
something.
Yeah. And they said, almost as good as it's Sun Gold, it said. And so I
almost.
Said, oh, well, yeah, you know, comparable too. So I planted some of those, and they're a little smaller, but the taste is wonderful. A little yellow, gold, little tomato. It's a little, at least this year on my farm, they're a little smaller than a regular Sun Gold.
Are they like the size of a ground cherry or something?
Yeah, a little bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're lovely. They're lovely.
Tart or sweet?
Tart. Very nice.
Ooh.
Very nice. Very nice. And they are called, get this, Engelhart. Engelhart cherry.
E-N?
I-N.
I-N.
Engelhart. So, three cheers for Seed Savers Exchange. That's one I was looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, it has met expectations. It is good. One thing I have noticed, I don't know whether because it's a heritage variety or whatever, it hangs onto the vine quite a bit. You have to give it a little tug. I've squashed a few, pulling them off. They don't just fall into your hand. But maybe that's just early in the season. We'll see how it goes. They're coming fast. They're coming furious. It's good.
And the farmers markets will be full of tomatoes pretty soon. What do you think for this week coming?
Oh, tomatoes, onions, leeks. I harvested some shallots. A little too early to bring them in. I wanted to dry out a little bit, though. Oh, but sweet corn.
I noticed the peppers. The peppers were hitting early,
peppers,
too.
Peppers.
So far,
are good.
So good.
Right? And sweet corn. Sweet corn is sneaking its way in. And we'll have a little bit on sweet corn later in the show. Kind of some advice from a sweet corn farmer. We also want to talk a little bit about some seasonal fruit. Like, you said this is the best time of year. It is. Blueberries. Blueberries. You make the best blueberry cobbler.
Well, thank you. I think the secret to the cobbler that I made the last time was, first of all, lots of really good blueberries. Don't skimp on the blueberries. All I did was, I used one of my lard recipes, but it can be done with butter. So you grease the pan, you pour the blueberries on. Then I put just a little lemon zest. I take some lemons and zest them over and then add some sugar in with that, mix it all up. Then I make a biscuit dough, and I used lard instead of butter for the biscuit dough. And I used a whole wheat pastry flour. And I think I might have put a pinch of dried coriander seed into the dough. And, of course, sugar. It's a sweetened biscuit dough. And then you just kind of dot it all over the top of the blueberries with – you don't want to cover the whole thing. You want some spaces where you see the blueberries, and then just put it in the oven, and it just does its thing. And, of course, you serve it with whipped cream.
Well, of course.
And I did rose geranium whipped cream.
That's one of your specialties, and it's good.
I can't keep my hands out of the rose geraniums.
So, blueberries, enjoy that. Enjoy. We've got a few more weeks of blueberry picking, I think. Yes,
yeah,
we do.
Yeah, we had, you know, we had Judy Henry from the Berry Patch on, and she's got 2.5 acres of blueberries of you pick. So it's a real fun adventure for the children.
And people, too, because older people, too, because people like me enjoy blueberries. They don't have any thorns on them. It's so nice to pick. It's so nice to pick. And you don't have to crawl on your knees like you do for strawberries. Every berry is worth it, but blueberries are really fun. So
tell us about the apricots. Lana has been making the most fabulous apricots jam this year.
Yeah.
And I'm sure part of it's the recipe, and part of it was that the apricots, if you can find any around here, the local apricots have been just perfect.
Yes, yes, you can grow apricots in Iowa, thanks to my friend Marilyn. She has some apricot trees.
And I think Marilyn said that's Marilyn Anderson at Farm to Folk. She has, I believe she said, 6 trees.
Yes, and it was one of those things where quite a few years ago, some plant some apricots. Well, I don't know. They're not going to do much. Just put them out there. They are huge. They are a wonderful surprise. They do wonderful bunches of apricots. And I suppose they don't do every year, like depending on the freeze. But
they weren't as good. I mean, last year was nothing like this year.
Yeah.
This year is just sublime.
So just like anything, that if you're going to be making jams, getting a really good ripe fruit is important.
Yeah, but you made an apricot honey. Are you going to tell us about the recipe that you used for
will.
This one?
I will.
I mean, you are a very experienced jam maker, and all of your jams are good, but this one it's like sunshine in a jar.
Right. So these are Iowa apricots, and this has got Iowa honey in it, too, so it's really good. I don't know why. I have made apricot jam before, but somehow putting some honey with it is really good. And I got my inspiration from a book that I have mentioned on this radio
show
before.
It's one we both really, really like and recommend.
It's called Mes Confitures, The Jams and Jellies of Christine Ferber.
So it's French recipes, but they're all very easily adapted to American. In fact, it's in cups and ounces. Hooray!
That helps a lot. Mm-hmm. It really does. Mm-hmm. But I got my inspiration from her. This is the kind of book where you start out, and of course she's starting out in the explaining her methods and everything, and of course she does everything perfectly, picking things when the dew is still on the vine and getting
it. Well, but there are other things, like Lana has the perfect jam pot, right?
Yeah. I'll talk a little bit about jam and jelly technology. I got inspired by this book to go out and get something called a Maslin pan. This is a big stainless steel, extra, extra heavy bottom pan that has
it's sloping, a beauty. It's just
sloping
a beauty.
Sides. And if you've ever tried to fuss with pouring sticky hot jams, this is out of a pan. This is designed for sticky hot.
How do you spell maslin?
M-A-S-L-I-N.
Uh-huh.
You can find it online or ask your favorite purveyor of cooked things to get one for you.
How much of a sort of investment do you think?
It's like 80 bucks or something? It's kind of like pricey. I think mine was 80.
Of course, it'll last longer than you.
Oh, yes. And it is handy. It's got a great handle.
It's also good because it has a very thick bottom, which dissipates the heat. It's good for other things that could tend to burn and stick.
Now, according to this recipe book by Christine Ferber, her pan, of course, is copper. She's going to do a copper. I did not want to shell out for a copper maslin pan.
No, so, and besides, they're hard to maintain.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm for stainless steel. Maybe that's American, but
stainless steel.
It's great.
It has helped. What is nice is that you can bring things to a boil without it burning. That's an important thing.
And how big is your pot? Like
6 quarts.
Six quart? Okay.
Yeah. It's a big honker.
Lana's trying to show you with her hands on the radio just about how big it is, but 6 quart, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And that, because I've been making jams and jellies for years, and I've burned a lot of things on the bottom of a pan, and you got to keep stirring, and I don't really follow recipes, I don't really follow methods, so things do get away from me occasionally.
Right, because you use whatever is at hand.
Right, basically. And also, you can be as persnickety as you want, but it all depends on the fruit.
I prefer to be nonchalant.
Oh, nonchalant. Yes. Okay, but it depends on the fruit, too, how much pectin, how much sugar it's got in, how ripe is it. Anyway, apricots. Oh, and another bit of, I'll talk about another bit of jam technology afterwards, but this maslin pan, this big pan that I cook things down in, has just made my life real fun, because now I can kind of get beyond the disaster stage of burning things to, let's make some really good jam. And these apricots were easy to pick from the tree, or they just fell on the ground, and they let the grass grow really nice and thick underneath, so I didn't really bruise them too much. Okay, here's how you do this thing here. You need 2.5 pounds of apricots, three, and this is about, okay? 3 cups granulated sugar. There is sugar in here. 7 ounces of honey. And I used a little bit more of honey. And I got
7 ounces. That's just shy of a cup,
yeah,
basically.
That's a little shy of a cup. Mm-hmm. And I kind of go for the darker honey. I didn't use buckwheat honey, but there was some choices at Farmer's Market. And I went for a really dark, tasty one. So 7 ounces of water just to kind of help things along here. And juice of 2 small lemons. Okay. Rinse the apricots in cold water. Cut them in half to pit them. They cut and pit really easily.
Oh, yeah, that's the great thing about apricots. No problem.
Stone cling free.
Yeah.
You can get that pit out of there really easy. Mix the apricots, sugar, water, honey, and lemon juice in a ceramic bowl and cover with a sheet of, she says, parchment paper. I use saran wrap. Refrigerate, and this is a word, macerate for an hour. Macerate. Let it sit. This method of,
That means it'll draw the juices out of it. That's what macerating means.
Right. Because the acid and the sugars, you wouldn't think there's a lot of liquid in there.
It's sort of like when you cut the strawberries up for a strawberry shortcake or something. If you let them sit even 15 minutes with the sugar on them, all of a sudden you have nice juice and that sort of thing.
This method really is nice for separating the juice from the solids, and then you can.
And you use that full amount of sugar because it was not overly sweet.
No, I did.
It was very fruit forward. Yeah, yeah. Really.
I am generous with the lemons, like you are. I like to put lemons in. Okay, so after that's macerated for an hour, pour the contents of the bowl into a preserving pan, my maslin pan, and simmer. Don't let it boil hard. Just bring it to a simmer. Pour back into the bowl and cover again and refrigerate overnight.
Did you not have to mash it at all?
They just fell apart. And I've learned with these recipes, with this overnight maceration, that you want to kind of keep the fruit in little chunks, little lovely chunks, mm-hmm. and have the syrup separate. Okay. And then the next day, pour this mixture into a sieve and let it drip into the muslin pan. And I just let it sit for a good hour or so and don't mush it too much. All this juice comes out. Bring the accumulated syrup to a boil. And then you continue cooking on high heat. The syrup will be sufficiently concentrated at 221 degrees Fahrenheit. You can use a candy thermometer or 105 degrees Celsius. And then after that's boiled for a while, you can kind of check the stickiness of it. Besides mm-hmm. the candy thermometer, you check for a set. You check to see if
so
it's sticky.
So this is a jelly recipe.
Well, you're making jelly out of the...
Right.
Out of the... And then you put back the apricot halves.
Oh, there we go. There we go. I was going, this is not making sense to me because yours had...
I'm not done yet.
Beautiful okay. chunks in it.
Now, these lovely chunks that have not been boiled to death, they have been macerated. They have not been boiled much. Now you bring them to a little gentle boil for 5 minutes. Stir gently, skim carefully, and again check the set. And put the jams into jars and seal
then you're,
and process.
You're holding back mm-hmm. what hasn't dripped through,
right.
but you're not discarding it.
Nope.
And then you boil what's dripped through
yep.
till it condenses and reaches that jelly stage. Mm-hmm. And then you reincorporate the solids into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tricky.
And that it makes the jelly not only pretty, but it really has a really nice feel to your mouth because it's got chunks in it. I like chunks.
Okay, I have to say that is a technique I have never used, and I think I like it. I might have to do it myself.
It seems a fuss, this idea. Overnight. Oh, but I'm kind of a meanwhile sort of chef anyway. I kind of go in and start.
No, you just, you do it in steps.
Yeah.
I wonder if we can do the same process with peaches.
Yes.
What do you think?
Yes. Most of the recipes in this book are similar to this sort of thing. She separates things out, makes sure that the juice and the fruit stay as fresh as possible. And we shall experiment with some peaches because talk about Iowa apricots. There are beautiful Iowa peaches coming.
And what a rarity this is. I mean, the years when the peaches are good in Iowa are scarce as hen's teeth.
Scarce as hen's teeth, but they're good. So that was apricot jam. And I want to mention a little bit about something that I brought along, my wooden spoon. Now, recipes talk about using a candy thermometer, and I've used that too. But I've learned how to read a spoon, and you can find the Joy of Cooking talks about this. When jam and or jelly is set, is thick enough, has enough sugar content and enough water boiled away, so it coats a spoon when you hold it sideways, and so it comes off the spoon in two drops on the side, and those two drops run together.
From each side and it makes a drop.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. There's two drops that come up. If it's not ready, it just comes off as one lump.
Uh-huh.
But if it comes off as two drops, you're getting there. And then you also use the spoon to test it by putting it on a cold plate and it'll make a little
right.
drop.
Right. I guess we never talked about this, but using wooden utensils in things like muslin pans are absolutely using a silver one or a stainless steel one does not feel right.
No.
The metal on metal isn't right. It's a wooden spoon for these kinds of things.
And I just have, everyone will have their own favorite. I have a favorite. And I have a favorite because it's a certain shape that, I can read how sticky that juice is as it comes off of there. So you'll get to know your spoon.
Let's say that Lana's is a nicely aged wooden spoon. Everybody has their own collection. Oh, it has a mark on it. What does this say? Oh, the Pampered Chef wooden spoon.
There you go.
Well, I keep a whole jar of them sitting around because who could live without wooden spoons?
That's true. And it's helped me with my jelly thing. And don't be discouraged. Try jelly any old way. Get yourself a sure gel packet. Read it off the back of there and do that. It's a process.
Or at least jams are preserved.
Jams are preserved.
That means you throw it in the pot with the sugar and cook it till it's done.
And adding the pectin, adding the commercial pectin mm-hmm, does help mm-hmm. it thicken. It gloms onto all of the
I have a terrible trick that I should never say in public, but I will. if I don't want to mess with pectin and I'm not trying to make a jam that needs to have a long shelf life, I've been known to thicken it with cornstarch.
Oh, you. It'll work. It'll work.
The jelly never lasts very long anyway. You just gobble it right up.
There you go. There you go. We've been talking about apricot jam. And this was apricot jam with Iowa honey. Iowa apricots and Iowa honey. So three cheers to all the people out there who have wonderful fruit trees. And three cheers for the bees,
and the ones
too.
That have honeybees.
Oh, the honeybees. Thank you. Thank you for that. And we've been talking about the book, Mes Confitures, The Jams and Jellies of Christine Ferber, a dandy little book that, like I say, I don't follow recipes strictly, but this book has kind of bounced me on my jam and jelly adventure.
Yeah, and she explains
it.
Things very well,
yeah.
And kind of encourages you to make your own combinations. And
yeah,
it's the same book I use, too.
Very, very good. You're listening to KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City Ames. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa.
My latest son is taking pace. My race is nearly run. My strongest trials now are past. My triumph has begun. Oh.
Back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was the Stanley Brothers singing Angel Band, a fine gospel tune. That reminds me of summer. I don't know why, but summer is a time of garage sales and rummage sales. I recently went to the Collegiate Presbyterian rummage sale, and it's a dandy here in central Iowa. Hope you all found stuff there. And I found that CD. And that song was on at the CD is the Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack. I didn't have it in my collection, and I thought, why not? It's a good use of recycling and reusing and repurposing things. So it comes from a rummage sale to your ears here on KHOI Radio. There's there's lots of garage sales and rummage sales. The City of Ames actually is holding a citywide rummage sale this coming weekend in the Intermodal Transportation Facility. Don't you like that name? Intermodal Transportation Facility.
Doesn't it make us sound really sophisticated?
It does. It's where the Greyhound bus stops is where it is over there in Campus Town. And that is Friday, June 29th, Saturday, July 30th, and Sunday, July 31st, Monday, August 1st, and Tuesday, August 2nd.
Good heavenly days. They must be counting on a lot of
rummage. I think they
are.
Well, when you think of all the stuff that changes hands and goes in and out of apartments here, so that's this weekend. Take advantage of that. So garage sales and book sales and, oh, let's just trade all our stuff around here. This is good. There is a wonderful event coming up in August. This fine radio station is celebrating our 4-year anniversary. Come and join us on August 13th right here on Douglas Avenue, downtown Ames, for our 4B celebration, four-year birthday, 4B celebration, which includes birthday, basketball, books, and barbecue. The event will be at 410 Douglas Avenue, right in front.
Can you explain that?
What?
A barbecue, basketball.
Oh, it's four separate things, sort of, barbecue. See, all these wonderful folks down here, all these volunteers get together and they said, birthday, 4 years, four birthday, four Bs. So let's have four Bs, birthday, basketball, books, and barbecue. You'll have to come and see how this all fits together.
I guess so. It sounds like it's not to be missed.
It isn't. One thing that will be part of this community radio station's fine birthday celebration is a book sale.
Book sale. Now, that makes sense.
Now, book sale, that's
I'm sure I can show up with some books, and maybe we'll even have some cookbooks.
Oh, I bet we will. If you have any books out there to donate, even just a handful of good books that need a new home, CDs or records, too, please bring them down to the station at 410 Douglas Avenue in downtown Ames. If you have a large amount of books and need help transporting them, contact the station, and we will send someone to help you get those books moved. And you can contact the radio station by calling 292-2878 or go to the website, khoifm.org. You'll find out more about us, more about Donna Lana Kitchen, more about this fine radio station. This is community radio. Really, it is the voice of the people that you hear on the radio. This is not commercial radio.
It's your neighbors.
It is. You can probably even find us at the book sale, too. We will be there. Yes. So remember that. Mark your calendar for August 13th for birthday barbecue, book sale, and basketball. Yes. Talking about books. The Ames Public Library has an ongoing wonderful program of book club offerings. They have extra stacks of books, and they mark them as book sale, and they mark them as book club, and that means that you can actually keep the book out longer than you normally would, and you can connect up with other people who have read the book.
You can take it out for 6 weeks, I believe.
And
they have multiple copies. I don't know how many, like, I don't know, 10 or 12 or something, so that you can do this in a group.
It's good. And we have found one that is just begs to be a book club book. Tell us a little bit about that, Donna.
So it's called The New Prairie Kitchen. Imagine, I thought that was very clever of them to think of a cookbook for a book club. And the point of this one is it's written by a young lady named Summer Miller, but it's all about the local foods and the chefs and the farmers mostly in the Omaha area, although there are a lot of our Iowa farmers included, and of Nebraska, some maybe even into Missouri. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, it's really aimed at the local provenance of the western part of Iowa. However, because the seasons are the same, a lot of the recipes apply to exactly what's going on here. And Lana and I thought we might make the offer, if anyone is interested and they decide to have a book club, that on one occasion we would actually come and talk about the book and maybe focus on local farmers where you can actually go and find exactly what they're talking about in the book.
We'd love to hear from you. This is great. We both have a copy of the book here, and we're just kind of flipping through it. And it's got great pictures, and it's got great bios of some really nice people.
And the recipes are They do pick a lot of more well-known chefs, especially from Omaha, a few from Des Moines. And some of the recipes, I would say, are – they might be a bit daunting for the home chef, but you do get ideas. But there are plenty of things in there that are not too difficult. There are a number of really nice tomato recipes for when the season is coming up, like this tomato – chutney recipe. I've made things like this, which I really, really like. It's tomatoes, vinegar, garlic, ginger root, onion, jalapeno, brown sugar, salt, raisins. Oh, she puts toasted pecans and lemon zest. And then you kind of just cook it all down. And they're recommending just taking a nice French loaf of bread and cutting it, putting some goat cheese on, and then putting the tomato chutney on top.
Oh, very good.
I must say that it would also be good on sandwiches, too.
Very good. And as any good cookbook, it seems, that is made nowadays, not only does the food, the recipes make your mouth water, the pictures are gorgeous. And there's some really nice bios and really nice stories about the producers here in the Midwest that are providing food. Backgrounds on, there are 20-some farmers and artisans from Iowa, plus Nebraska and South Dakota and other places, too. There are 1, 2, 3, 4 Iowa restaurants talked about it. And you might even recognize some of these folks are Nyman Ranches in there. Ebert Honey from Linville, Iowa. Grimes Sweet Corn. Tabletop Farm. Cleverly Farm. Maxwell Farms, my goodness, all kinds of good stuff. Reichardt's Dairy Air, which is the best name for a goat dairy I ever heard of.
The Dairy Air. True. Now, that would be good with the tomato chutney.
Wouldn't that? So this recipe book has really kind of inspired us to do good things.
It's kind of nice to see a book that really follows a lot of the things that we've been talking about on the radio for the last 3 years. It's nice to see it in print with all these gorgeous pictures.
That's right. There's a PFI member that I've met and gotten to know. Her name is Kate Edwards. She's in this book. She's a farmer at Wild Woods Farm in Solon, Iowa. Wild Woods Farm. And there's a great picture of her smiling. She's got a great smile. And she says, "I consider it an incredible privilege to call myself a farmer." So that's kind of the tone of the book. It's got all kinds of good things in there. And like Donna said, we'd like to plow through this book ourselves, but it'd be ever so much fun to hear from you, too. So if you want to talk about this book with us, or we'll contact the library, too, and kind of see if anybody else is excited about local foods and the new Prairie Kitchen as we are. If you would like to contact us, you can email us here at the station, khoiradio@gmail.com, and put Donna Lana Kitchen or DLK in the headline and say, "Hey, I kind of like that book. Let's talk about it." Anyway, we will continue to peruse this book and peruse the farmers markets.
Right, that's
get
the new
things.
Prairie Kitchen by Summer Miller.
Very good. Available at the Ames Public Library in their book club section, so ask about that. That's good. Fine book. A fine book.
And if you can't remember the name of it, I did wander. Lana told me about it, so I wandered into the library and said, "Is there some cookbook that you guys have that's actually in the book club section?" And she said, "Oh, yes, right this way."
See?
So that's all you have to know. Show up at the library.
Such nice people. So, enjoy summer and enjoy some inspiration from the new Prairie Kitchen. Another classic taste of summer is Iowa sweet corn. Oh, here it is, Donna. Here is the time. Donna and Lana are going to have sweet corn. Yes, we talked to Ray Olson about sweet corn. Ray Olson is a sweet corn farmer from Madrid, Iowa. He grows a lot of the stuff. We asked Ray's advice about picking a good ear of sweet corn. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're here in the studio with Ray Olson. He's talking about sweet corn. The growing, tending, picking, and getting to all this stuff to market sounds like a real challenge. How do you deal with it all? What is the perfect timing to get corn that tastes really good onto your plate to eat it?
Well, the first step is probably knowing when to pick it.
Ah.
You don't want to pick it too early. You don't want to pick it too late.
So do you go out and strip a few ears down? Is that how you tell?
Kind of a combination of that and experience. I can tell.
You can pinch the ear and know what it feels like?
Yeah, you can kind of tell by gripping the ear. And,
mm-hmm.
and again, I'm familiar enough now with varieties to know when it's ready. Some varieties have a larger girth to the ear,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and you can tell that way. And then just to check on my own experience, I will check a few to see if it's consistent. Now, we're looking at the end of an ear of corn here. Here are some that didn't pollinate.
Mm-hmm.
See,
not
so they
very
never,
many, yeah.
Not, yeah, there's like five or six.
Mm-hmm. Five mm-hmm. out of 500,
so that's what
that's
it looks
bad.
Like. It's just looks like kind of a little empty green mm-hmm. shell.
That's kind of a natural thing to happen. And considering a ear of corn, like you said, had 540 kernels on it, the fact that a few didn't germinate, that's fine. So here I am at Farmer's Market, and people are always pulling back the ears. And how do you pick a good one, Ray? How do you pick a good one?
Well, probably the things that you're able to do by the time it gets to market are limited.
You can either buy it or not buy it.
Yeah, buy or not buy. The critical phase is from the time that it's picked when we in essence, we kill it.
There we go.
And the time that you get it.
Oh.
And
the less time, the better, right?
The less time, the better, and the lower the temperature, the better.
Okay.
That's why, whenever possible, we try to pick the morning, not the day before that has all the heat in the ear. Because what happens, and again, I hope your ears don't glaze over here, but from a chemistry standpoint, once the ear is taken off the stalk, the enzymes begin to break the sugars down to starch. So that conversion process, as soon as that crack off the plant happens, that process starts. So what do you do to slow it down? You refrigerate it. You keep it cool. You keep it from warming up. So if you want good corn, again, I guess you're going to have to trust the grower that they have cared for it between the time it was harvested
and
the time
that
you get it.
Can you look at it like by how dried the silk is, or is there any way of really knowing how fresh it is by just visually inspecting it?
You could look at the silks and the husks, see if you have kind of a natural color. If it's turned gray, it would be maybe a day or two old. But even then, it can fool you because if it's been refrigerated, the quality will stay there.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody that wants to buy the freshest sweet corn, it either needs to be picked that morning or it needs to be refrigerated as soon as it's picked. So, and I don't know if I mentioned this before, but that first 2 hours or so is the most critical. So if it gets heated up for 2 hours, and then you put it in the fridge.
Do you have refrigeration at your farm, or do you just pick every morning?
We pick each morning, and then I have a cooler that will bring the temperature down in a trailer to about 40 to 45 degrees.
Oh, so that takes the field heat out of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that takes the rest of the field heat. Now, if you want to store it for more than 2 or 3 days, it needs to go down to about 33 degrees.
Wow, that cold, just
but
above.
But I don't store very much corn.
You sell it.
I try
so
to get
can
it sold.
Eat it.
And, you know, some that doesn't sell goes to the food pantry, and, you know, mm-hmm. there are lots of other people that can make use of
eating
of the
sweet corn.
Corn
is one of the absolute pleasures of Iowa in the summertime. Remember that some of the country, you have to, like, ship the sweet corn in, and we can get it relatively fresh. I think.
Well, thank goodness we're very corny here in Iowa.
Yes,
if we don't have good corn in Iowa, it's not going to happen anywhere.
Here we are. We are back. Yes, it is sweet corn season. Thanks to Ray Olson there for giving us a few heads up about the freshness of Iowa sweet corn. I want to take a little minute here to as they say on the radio, a shout out. I have a brother who lives in Missoula, Montana, and he's kind of making a reputation for himself. He moved up from the Midwest out there. They don't have a lot of sweet corn out there, and he's kind of expanded his garden every year, and now he's taken sweet corn to his little local farmer's market and having a really good time. He got tired of shipping sweet corn in, so three cheers to Brother Joe out there doing a good job with the sweet corn. Spread that sweetness around. How do you like your sweet corn, Donna? Just butter?
You know what? I don't put anything on it.
Ooh.
If it's really good, I just give it a, you know, just the light steam treatment and down the hatch, at least for one ear. If I really get going, it's always good with butter and salt and even a little pepper. Or people put, you know, a little paprika on it. Or, I mean, you can do anything. But when I get really good corn, I at least one ear au naturel.
Yeah, that first bit, and it's coming. There is farmer's market corn and farmer's stand corn out there, so enjoy. And thank the farmer while you are at it. It's not an easy thing to keep that corn away from the all those critters out there that like the sweet corn just as much as we do. You're listening to KHOI. KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen by going to the KHOIFM.org website. Find out about this radio station. Find out how you can support the radio station and get involved. If you don't like what's on the radio, come on in and make your own show. Really, there's people here that help you. We learned how to do this. Yes, yes. And you can find more about the Donna Lana Kitchen, too, on that space. There is a archive of all our past shows. There is recipes. You can find it there, khoifm.org.
Okay, well, I have something very cheesy to announce. This coming weekend in Des Moines, we're having a really unusual event. It's the American Cheese Society, which gathers annually at usually some major city in the U.S., and we are actually having it in Des Moines this year. And it's cheeses from all over. It does include some Canadian cheeses as well. So, but anything on this continent, only American cheeses. And it's a judging contest as well as, you know, 3 days of classes for any wannabe cheesemakers or cheesemongers. So, it's a 4-day event at the Event Center in Des Moines. They're expecting 1,200 attendees, but I want to tell you, it's for 1,800 cheese products.
Oh,
so,
my.
Apparently, a young woman from, I think she's young anyway, from Ames, is the co-chair of the event. It's Stephanie Clark. She's a member of the Iowa State University's dairy team. She's a professor of food science and human nutrition. And Cheese in the Heartland will feature a lot of speakers. But the culminating event, Saturday evening, is a public tasting.
Oh, my.
So for those of us who are gluttons, and I will be one of them, if you go 7 to 9:30 p.m. on Saturday at the cost of $55 per ticket, unless you volunteered. Now, I'm going to volunteer. And they do need plenty of volunteers, so you can still go to the American Cheese Society website and check out volunteering opportunities. But if you don't want to do that, I would suggest – I've been to these events before, and I went to one in San Francisco. You've never seen so many cheeses in your life. It's like dying and going to dairy heaven.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, like milk and honey, but milk. Tasting this many cheeses is daunting, but you really, really, you learn a lot. There are many, you know, different categories. The prize winners will be marked, so you can taste.
Oh, they're judged ahead of time.
Oh, yes.
So, good.
So for the tasting on Saturday night, there are just different tables of displayed, you know. There's the cheddars, the blues, the soft cheeses, the aged cheeses, the washed rind cheeses. And, of course, all the prize winners will be clearly marked, and you can just come hungry. Let me warn you.
Does one have options? I mean, is there something like to clear the palate? It seems how do you keep all the cheese tastes separate?
I don't know what they have in mind here, but the ones I've been to have like other little side products so that you know, different breads or I think fruits and
water, wine, is that sort of thing in between?
I have no idea what they're going to do here, and it's been about 10 years since I've been to one of these things. But I must say, when I did attend, it was one of the most beautiful displays of food products and really, really enchanting. So I'm very much looking forward to it. I think we're quite fortunate that this is going to be in Des Moines. And hopefully, I know that our own Prairie Breeze cheese has won in the past.
Oh, good.
And I'm sure we'll have some new entrants and a lot of – and I do want to warn you, if you're going – and you're doing the tasting, start like you would with the cheese board. You start with the mild flavors and progress to the more strongly flavored cheeses. Usually you start with soft, fresh cheeses, maybe ricottas. And there are lots of other kinds of dairy products, things that I'm sure there'll be quarks, there'll be sour creams, there'll be, you know, that sort of thing. So you start with the sweeter, less strongly flavored cheeses, and you work all the way through till you hit the blue cheeses at the end.
Oh, that sounds
just my recommendation, because otherwise your palate gets kind of overwhelmed by the more strongly flavored ones, and then it's harder to really taste the nuances. So anybody looking for a cheesy education, this is Saturday night, 7 to 9:30 p.m., at the Festival of Cheeses. Look it up under the American Cheese Society. They have a big website about it. In Des Moines, hope to see you there. And do come hungry.
Ooh, sounds like we're going to have a follow-up report on a future
diet. I'll take some notes.
Okay, good. Okay. Enjoy. There's all kinds of things we think about when we eat. And here's some good thoughts about good things. Let's listen to some music here.
One evening as the sun went down and the jungle fire was burning, down the track came a hobo hiking, and he said, "Boys, I'm not turning. I'm headed for a land that's far away, beside the crystal fountains. So come with me, we'll go and see the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, there's a land that's fair and bright, where the handouts grow on bushes, and you sleep out every night. Where the boxcars all are empty, and the sun shines every day, on the birds and the bees and the cigarette trees, the lemonade springs where the bluebird sings, in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, all the cops have wooden legs, and the bulldogs all have rubber teeth, and the hens lay soft-boiled eggs. The farmer's trees are full of fruit, and the barns are full of hay. Oh, I'm bound to go where there ain't no snow, where the rain don't fall, the wind don't blow, in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, you never change your socks, and the little streams of alcohol come a-trickling down the rocks. The brakemen have to tip their hats, and the railroad bulls are blind. There's a lake of stew and a whiskey, too. You can paddle all around them in a big canoe in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, the jails are made of tin, and you can walk right out again as soon as you are in. There ain't no short-handled shovels, no axes, saws, or picks. I'm a-going to stay where you sleep all day, where they hung the Turk that invented work, in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. I'll see you all this coming fall in the Big Rock Candy Mountains.
There you go. That was another little tune from my rummage sale find, so I hope you enjoyed that. All the good thoughts about good food and good living. Yes, it is. We've got a special event coming up. Well, actually, it has been, this is a series of events, and we're kind of into the middle of it here. Wheatsfield Wheatsfield Co-op is having a Wheatsfield summer tour. They have construction going on in their store right now. So they usually have classes in the store, but it's full of all kinds of construction and plastic and walls going up and sawdust. And so for this summer, several of the Wheatsfield members are hosting classes at their house or at different locations this summer, and you can attend. Pre-registration for these things are required. So contact Wheatsfield and contact Susan Jasper to register for these classes. But they're fun. They're good. And then you'll get more information there.
Tonight there's a class at Helen Gunderson's. It's on permaculture and
urban gardening. It should be fun. There's always fun things to see there.
We're going to tour her garden and watch her chickens. And Lana and I will be there, and we will be recording some of it because we're going to talk about permaculture. And we're going to have pink pickled eggs.
Thanks to Donna. Talk about a fun thing to have in the summer. I like
yeah,
her.
So if you have time to make the tour, give Susan a call at Wheatsfield. See if we can fit you into the class.
Yes. So that's
tonight.
And Thursday, August 4th, there's one on food and justice at Mustard Seed Community Farm. And Tuesday, August 9th, there's one on fermented foods and kombucha at the Alluvial Brewing Company.
Oh, I'm going to show up for that one.
That sounds
for
like
both of them. All of them.
All of them, and they're good. So, yes, contact Wheatsfield for that. Nice time to go see other things and learn new things. Very good. We've been talking about summer stuff. Apricot jam for one and sweet corn for another and blueberry
cobbler. Watch out for the peaches. Here they come.
Oh, my goodness. You never know. We'll have to talk about how to ripen peaches. They kind of sneak up on you every now and then. And we always talk about, did you get the Colorado peaches? Did you get the
Missouris they're in big in all the stores right now. But, you know, I actually bought something labeled Illinois peaches, and they've been quite good. And they were slightly less expensive than the Missouri peaches. So I bought quite a lot of those, and I do remember my childhood in southern Illinois that peaches actually did happen. I'd completely forgotten about that.
Good. Another thing to celebrate. I have to look up a peach recipe. I think that'd be good for a jam, too. I haven't made a peach jam in a long time.
There's peach cobbler. There's peach shortcake. There's peach ice cream. Oh. There's peaches on your breakfast toast.
Oh, and peaches in salsa. That's a new thing.
Yes, that's right.
We've got things to explore. Yes, we do. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Enjoy all those summer tastes out there. There's so much to enjoy. We live in a wonderful place. Celebrate Iowa. We've been listening to music from the soundtrack from Brother, Where Art Thou? That I found at a rummage sale. Yes. This is Keep on the Sunny Side by the group The Whites. Support this fine radio station, KHOI Community Radio. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintos.
We've had excellent engineering by Dalton Gackle. Enjoy summer. Eat good food and enjoy life.
Sunny side, you also may be. Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way if we'll keep on the sunny side of life.